and she recently celebrated her 25th anniversary. Yeah, so please show much love for Shirley.
My name is Shirley Kay, and I'm a grateful alcoholic. My sobriety date is June 12, 1985. The grace of God in this program. Wow, I am freaking nervous. So first of all, never tell anybody in front of your sponsor that you're a grateful alcoholic, because this is why I'm standing up here tonight. Because I was here 2 months ago when Susan spoke. And after the meeting, it was only Bill and I and somebody else out there, and Julie, of course, chats with everybody. She's friends with everybody. And he said something to me. He said, would you like to be a speaker? I said, no. You know, I don't think so. And my sponsor said to me, which is my very good friend, oh, what is it that I hear you say at meetings? I'm a grateful alcoholic. I'm a grateful alcoholic. Well, I am, but I just don't do speaking. And then she told Bill, just put her down. So, in fact, when I left the house tonight, my husband, he said, are you nervous? And I go, not too much. I go, but I will be when I get up in front of 5,000 people. And he said, you know, there's no way that I would ever do that. And he wouldn't. And I said, you know what? There's no way that I would have done this before coming to the program. But I said, I've been told that I have to give it back. So that's why I'm standing up here. So I'll tell you a little bit of my story. I might tell you a lot of my story. I don't know until they throw me off the... Once I get going, I'm okay. So. Anyway, I was born in New Hampshire, a small beach town like Pismo Beach, and I was one of seven children. And I had an older brother and five sisters, and I'm a twin. And she's normal. About as normal she could be my twin. But anyway, we were born at home. And that's many years ago when you were born at home, and my dad was a truck driver and he was on the road. And I probably never shared this with all you girls. And anyway, my dad was expecting one baby. He already had five. And anyway, big surprise when they come home, they pulled me out beneath the blanket. And there I was, the big surprise, and I'm sure I was over the years too. But anyway, I grew up in a Christian home. I had loving parents. And all us girls got along pretty good. We have our rivalries growing up, but we're very, very close now. We grew up in the church and went to Sunday school every Sunday and went to church and sang in the choir and did all those things. And I remember I was about 7 years old, and we were always in the church plays, and my twin and two of my little other sisters, we were in this play, and then we were angels. And anyway, and I didn't like to be in anything in front of anybody. And I remember I was up front, and I fainted, and they used to call me the fallen angel. You know what? Over the years, it's true. But you know, there is one little wing tucked back in her somewhere, I'm sure. But anyway, I grew up and had a really good life. I had loving parents, and my dad, I was my dad's girl. My mom used to call me Peck the Bad Girl, just like your dad. My dad was an awesome man. And I remember one Christmas, the church came and brought us a turkey and all kinds of stuff. And I thought, that is really, really nice. I've never heard of people doing that before. Well, anyway, I never thought more about it. I must have been about 9 or 10. And then my brother is a pilot, and he wrote some aviation books up in the Bay Area. And I was reading one of his books, and he said something, we were poor. I was so upset. I go, what the hell? I call my sister in New Hampshire. I go, what the hell was that? We were never poor. She said, Shirley, remember the year they brought us a turkey and everything? I went, well, I just thought we were nice people from the church. I said, I didn't know we were poor. But I never felt poor. And we always had wonderful Christmases. And I found out later on that my parents paid all year long for those Christmases they gave us seven children. But I'm one of the very fortunate ones probably standing up here tonight, because a lot of you young people probably didn't have that upbringing. And sometimes I almost feel guilty about it, but anyway, I'm really blessed for that. So anyway, I went through school, and I did manage to graduate from high school, and I started dating my ex-husband. And he wasn't. Maybe I said that wrong. Anyway, I started dating this person I married. But anyway, I should have known. He dated my sister for 2 years, and she broke it off, and maybe he wasn't the most stable person in the whole world. But anyway, he said one time, kiddingly, I don't think it was too damn funny, our name was Norris, and he goes, well, I couldn't have one Norris girl, I'd have another one. And, you know, I didn't think that was really too funny, but anyway, we got married when I was right out of high school. I graduated in June. Back then, that's what you did. You got married. And he was in the military, and he was an NCO at the club there on the Air Force Base in my hometown. And he drank, but I didn't think much about it. And that's the first time I ever took a drink, when I was almost 18. And so we got married, and we moved up to Plattsburgh, New York. That's up by Montreal. And he continued to drink. Well, first of all, we moved to Massachusetts, and our first child was born there. Then we moved up to Plattsburgh, New York, and it was awful. He drank a lot. He chased a lot. There was no food in the house. And I had a little corner store. I just shared this with Julie recently. A little corner store on the outside of the... I lived on the Air Force Base. And the lady gave me credit. And so I could buy, you know, food for the girls and everything. And I was pregnant with my last child. She was born in 1960 when I realized that I couldn't live this way anymore. I was kind of brave thinking about it now. I was 22 years old, and I was going to have 3 babies. And my parents were coming to California, and I thought, and they told me that I could come out here. And I said, okay, you know. Didn't look back. So anyway, my daughter was born, my youngest daughter, in 1960 in September. And in December, I moved to New Hampshire for a month, and then I come out to California in 61, January 61. And I was 22 years old. And I remember lived at Venice Beach for a while back then there. I was 61, so it was pretty wild. Muscle Beach. And I remember taking the girls one time. They were like, you know, 2.5, 1, 3.5, and telling them, if anybody comes up now, you're big sister. And they go, okay. And so right off the bat, this really good-looking man comes up and sits down. Oh, are you babysitting? And go in, and they go, Mom, can we have a cookie? And I'm like, he left. I don't like that. But anyway, it wasn't always easy. I worked 2 jobs. I was gone a lot from them, and, you know, it was really hard. But I think about it now, and, you know, it was not that bad. But anyway, we'll get to my drinking now, okay? Because during the time I was married, I didn't drink. I didn't have time. I was having babies. But anyway, came to California, and about 6 months, a year afterwards, I met a really close friend of mine at that time. And she was a legal secretary down in Los Angeles. So I had one night a week off, and I partied hardy. We went down to West L.A., Hollywood. And I went places and did things that I didn't want to think about sometimes. When I was doing my sex inventory, I was thinking about this one time. Okay. I didn't really have to make a lot of men, because we're talking about 1961. They're dead. I mean, I know they're dead. I mean, they gotta be way back then. I mean, I'm hanging on at 71. You just think how old they are. And some of them were older than me, so. Anyway. There was only one I was going to make amends to, but I don't even know where he is, so I'm not going to worry about that. But, God, I forgot where I am now. But anyway, that's what I did. One night a week, I drank insanely. I got into a bad car accident, and that was probably about 63. It was a bad car accident. And anyway, the person I hit was hurt a little bit, but I was in the emergency room, and I heard him through the screen naming all these medical things that were wrong with him. I go, oh my God, I get a doctor or whatever. And anyway, they came in, and during this time, they couldn't force you to take a blood test. I didn't know that. And so they held me down and they took a blood test. And it was not admissible. Somehow I had a good friend that was in the law enforcement, and he told me. And so it wasn't admissible, so I walked away from that one. And maybe if I hadn't, I don't know what would have happened. But anyway, I continued to drink, and I didn't have any more accidents at that time. And okay, I'm going to push this up a little bit. Okay. So then I met my husband now, and we're not divorced. We got married in 1967, and I had three girls, which I told you about, and they always stayed with me. One time somebody said to me, I was having trouble with a babysitter, and they said something about foster care. And I said, okay. So I went down to the welfare's office, and I thought, you know, this and this, and they go, okay, you can see them on certain days a month. And I went, what? You know, I thought, it was, they're going to take care of them. I didn't know they were going to more or less put them somewhere for a while and go, oh, I don't think so. But anyway, I didn't want that. So anyway, Gary and I got married, and my girls were 7, 9, and 10. And God, he was brave. Never been married. I told him because I made a good breakfast for him one morning. So I married there now. He said the eggs were horrible, so I don't remember. I thought they were pretty good. But anyway, we got married in 1967, and we're still married. We're going to celebrate 42 years this year. And he's a normie. And we lived down in Orange County for a few years, and we moved up here in 1974. And I knew, well, we used to go to Vegas off and on, that my husband liked to gamble, but I didn't know he really liked to gamble. And so we came to Porterville, where, you know, at that time there was a lot of little card houses in that town, a lot of little card houses. So anyway, he gambled a lot. And if he gambled a lot, I drank a lot. You know, he gave me $5. And you know how much I could drink on $5. I have that $5 today, probably, because I didn't hardly pay for a drink. You know, I just not to believe. What do you mean? I sat there falling off my stool, and you know, it got crazy. It really got crazy. I remember one night, I got really drunk. I drank in the bars. That's where I drank. I didn't drink at home. I was a pretty drinker, and I used to say that I was a functioning alcoholic. Well, I don't think you're too functioning when you stay in the bars at 3 o'clock in the morning and go work at the state hospital. You know, it's 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning, not too functional, but I always thought I was. But anyway, my drinking got really out of hand. I remember one night, he was throwing money away at the card game, and I thought, I've had enough of this. So I decided to walk out the door. But at the same time, somebody was coming in and knocked me right out on the sidewalk of my butt. And so then I walked back in there and sat down and drank some more because I thought, well, you know, whatever. But anyway, it continued. That's what I did. I one or two nights a week or maybe one every 2 weeks or so, I was in there drinking. And one night, I had a little bit too much, like every night. And I got into my car. And I had two friends of mine, and it was only like an eighth of a mile down Main Street. And I got in my car, and I was drunk. And, well, first of all, I went to another bar and drank more than I was coming back to that bar. And I hit a car. I ended up in the parking lot behind the Hofbräu, if anybody knows anything about Porterville. And I hit about 3 or 4 cars. And I thought, oh, my God. The person I hit was not hurt. The people in my car were not hurt. But I was in big trouble. So anyway, I went in and got my husband and told him to come out that I'd been in an accident. He walked out and he looked at the car and he flipped around, went right back in. He was really upset. So anyway, the policeman came over to me and started talking to me, and then he went and talked to some of the other people who owned the cars. They weren't that bad, just cab fenders and stuff. Nobody was in them, you know. I mean, Everybody's so upset. About 40 people standing out there. So anyway, about this time I thought, well, you know what, I've got to go to the bathroom. So I went to the bathroom. And I come out, the big policeman standing up against the door, and he goes, what are you doing? And I go, I just went to the bathroom. He goes, you just left the scene of an accident. I go, it's coming back. And you know, I don't know what he saw in me that night or how stupid he must have been what he did. But my husband walked back out and took one more look at me and walked in. And he walked over to me and he said, you got any friends here that aren't drinking? And I go, yeah. And he said, I'm going to go in there and ask one of them to come out and they're going to take you home. And I go, what? He said, you got enough problems at home. You don't need this. Never let me see you behind the wheel again. I just could not believe it. I could not believe it. The next day we went, looked at my car. It was total, the fun of it. It was so messed up. And I didn't stop drinking. You know, would you stop drinking? No. Oh, and that next morning I had a girlfriend that was giving trophies out at the college in Porterville, and she asked me to go with her, and I got all decked up, hungover. Yes, I was young. I was thin. And I went there, and who opens up the gate but that policeman? I went, oh, my God. He said, well, maybe I didn't make a mistake. And so I didn't say anything. So anyway, my drinking, after that I decided not to drink and drive. If I was going to drink, I was just going to walk up and down Main Street. Real intelligent. I never thought about getting public intoxication. Well, my husband gambled here and I drank there and drank there, whatever. And I always had this thing about I wanted to kick a window out where there were shoes. I don't know why I wanted to do this. One time I tried it and I couldn't kick it out. And one of my friends said, you know, you need to be quit doing this. You need to quit walking on the street. And I said, okay, I won't do it anymore. So anyway, it continued like that. And I had a really good job. I had a loving family. And, you know, but I didn't know I had a disease. I didn't know when I took that first drink, I could not stop. So anyway, you know, everybody has their last drink that they share. I had my two last drinks. On Mother's Day 1985, this is where the strawberries come into it. We're going up to the houseboat, the whole family. My in-laws live in town, and the only family I had in town besides my husband and my son, my girls had already gotten married and moved up, was my daughter, and she had four little children, and she didn't have a lot of money, so we're all going to the houseboat, so she made this beautiful strawberry pie, and it was just for the mothers, nobody else. So I put it in my refrigerator, and I told my husband, and my son was, I don't know, 14, 15, whatever. Do not touch that pie. So I went down and did something in the grocery. I come home and there was a big hunk out of that pie. I mean, a big freaking hunk. And I go, who did that? And Gary goes, well, I did. Anything in your refrigerator is mine. I go, don't you understand that was for the mothers tomorrow? Well, needless to say, I blew up, he blew up, and we're all supposed to go up the houseboat the next day, and he grabbed my son and he went off to the golf course. And, you know, I had all the food to take up there, and I knew I had to go, and I had a little white pickup. And so I thought, well, you know what? I am really pissed off. So I stopped at the little, that's just when wine coolers come out back then. I go, I'm going to get me a couple wine coolers. So I got me a couple wine coolers. I went to the lake. I got me a couple more. And anyway, I took the strawberry pie with me. My husband shows up, and they make a big joke about that pie. It's not funny. It's really not funny. No, it's not funny. And so, anyway, so I drank and I drank, and everybody's eating, and they're all saying, poor Shirley, you know, and I'm getting more pissed and more drunk. So I get in my car, and I decide, I'm not staying with any of these people. I'm going to go down to my daughter's in L.A. where they love me. Poor pathetic me. So anyway, I get to my girlfriend's house, and I walk in and throw my purse across the room. And she says, what are you doing? I said, I'm going to L.A. And she says, you ain't going anywhere. And she sobered me up, and kind of sobered me up. And she made me promise that I would go home. And I promised her. I still have drunk. So anyway, I just thought, I ain't going home. So I took my strawberry pie, and I went down to the hospital with my strawberry pie, and I went in there to talk to my husband's best friend and tell him what an asshole he was being. And he said, what are you doing here? And I said, and here's what happened. He goes, take your pie and get out of here. Smart man. Really smart man. But anyway, we were talking about this story, and that's why you have strawberries tonight. I would have made the strawberry pie, but when I was working at the State Hospital, I used to make desserts, and one of my friends came up to me, and she said, I heard you're a really good cook. And I go, yeah. And she goes, could you start cooking something, not baking anything? And I thought, excuse me. So evidently what I was baking wasn't too good. So I thought I didn't want to poison all of y'all, so I just brought strawberries. But anyway, I don't even know what happened to strawberry pie. I'll never know. I can't remember. I asked my husband. He goes, oh, we probably ate it. And I go, I wouldn't eat it. So anyway, that was on Mother's Day. Okay. So anyway, on June 8th, which was the last time that I took a drink, I played a lot of golf back then. I was really bad, but I had a big handicap. So I did really good. Anybody knows anything about golf? You just got to have a big handicap. You're okay. So we're playing golf, and they open up the bar. And I see that bottle of tequila, and I'm thinking, well, I could have one. That'd be okay, you know, just one. Well, I started drinking straight shots of it, and it was terrible. Anyway, they decided to have a little scramble. And I said, okay, so I waddle out there and get my clubs and get in there and fall off the cart. And so they take me home. And this is why I don't have an option to drink. I get goosebumps after all these years. I went in the bedroom, I locked the door, I was looking for shotgun. And I don't know what I was going to do with it. I don't know if I was going to hurt myself, somebody else. But they were able to get me to open the door and take the gun. And I don't remember any of that. Nothing. So they told me, I couldn't even believe when they told me that. Because I wasn't really angry at anybody. But I hated myself when I came off those Clinton streets. I hated myself. I can remember toward the end of my drinking, the only time that I ever thought about harming myself was I was driving to Springville one day. I'm thinking, gee, if I just drove my car right off this bridge, I wouldn't have to worry about taking a drink again. And that's the only two times, the only time that I remember ever wanting to hurt myself, and the other one I was in a blackout. So, guess what? I decided, and the fellow that opened the bar that night, he was in AA, and he suggested I might go to a meeting, and I said, okay, I think I need to do that. I was really, really scared when they told me what I did. So on June 12th, that is, I didn't have a drink from the 8th to the 12th. I didn't know way back then you could have a sobriety day the next day, so I just picked June 12th as my sobriety day, and I walked through the doors of AA. There was nothing but men in there. I mean, you were my best friend when I was drinking. But sober, I was scared to death of you guys. Scared to death. And I sat down and I started going to meetings. And I'm going to tell you something. I don't want you new girls ever doing this. But it's part of my story, so I got to share it with you. I went to one meeting a week for a year. I never took a drink. I never did nothing but sit there and ask a fellow to tell me, please don't ask me to talk. I don't want to talk. I knew I was in big trouble, and I knew that I probably could never drink again, but I didn't know how I was going to do that. I just knew someday something would set me off, and I would drink, and I would die, or I'd kill somebody in the car. And so it was getting time for me to celebrate my birthday, and I did not want to sit in front of all you guys. We had one or two women at that time that came to the meeting, and they didn't come that often because one was in school, and you know her. She's been around a long time. And I had this thought that's through my mind. If I have a drink, I won't have to celebrate a birthday. I went, phew, where in the hell did that come from? So, I mean, that's how much I did in a whole year. But I didn't. And I wrote pages and pages of wonderful stuff. And I was going to share all. Like, thank God I didn't. But anyway, I took, I had a birthday cake and I celebrated my first birthday. And then I started going to a women's meeting over here in Visalia, and that opened a new door for me. I felt more comfortable, and I did that for about a year and a half, and then I heard about a Springville meeting, and so I went up there, and they had a microphone just like this, Why do they do microphones? I don't know. But they had a microphone, and you had this, you know, if you were going to share it, you had this, you kept in front of the microphone. I'm like,
I ain't doing that. I ain't doing that.
But I went there for probably almost a year. And I remember Bob H., you probably know him, and Cheryl H., but I remember one time I said how scared I was with all you guys, and he goes, we were scared of you. And I remember one time I was having a birthday, you know how everybody talks and says nice things, like some people do. And Cheryl said, I remember how squirrely you were. And I thought, what the hell is that? It pissed me off. You know, is it because it reminds, you know, it was my name Shirley Squirrely? Whatever, I don't know. But anyway, I started getting into the program. And it was a while, you know. I got a sponsor 2 years later, something like that. But I got a sponsor, and I started working the steps. And after another year, I think I held a service position. I think I was a secretary. I cannot believe. I got a couple notes down here. I have to write this down because I still don't think I ever had any. But okay. When you get into the program, you have certain steps, right? On the fourth step, you have to do an inventory, right? Character defects. What the hell is character defect? I didn't have any character defects. I drank. When I quit drinking, I was perfect. What is that all about? You know, so the first thing I had to remember was humility, right? What the hell is humility? I'm humble. You know, whatever. So, anyway. So, I drank over resentment. I drank over anger. I drank if the sun came up or if it went down. I just drank because I was an alcoholic and didn't know it. And that's where I was, you know, and I started sponsoring some girls, and I haven't had a lot of luck with them. And to begin with, I've had luck with some of them, and I have to remember that it's their program, not mine. I'm not responsible for them, you know. And I did something like that. Okay, my sponsor. I love my sponsor. I have so many women at that table that I could cry thinking how much they have given me, every one of them. I still have a lot of work to do myself. I don't think you can believe that looking at me, but it's true. Last night, I said something. We have a newcomer, and she was saying how rough her life was and this and that, and my heart goes out to them, and I went, oh, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. And my sponsor stood there, and she said, you know what, it'll be okay. And she's got such a way with words. And I knew after I said that I should have let her talk and get all that out. You know, everybody needs to share their story and not have everybody say, oh, I'm so sorry, oh, or whatever. No. Let them share their story. They get into the program, they get a sponsor, they do their steps, and they heal. And so my sponsor talked to me about that today, and I said, yeah, that's something I need to do. I need to be a better listener. Now, when she first took me on, probably about 20 years ago, I don't know where it was. The minute she said something, I had something to say. Oh, okay, whatever. But I'm really working on that, and I'm trying to be the person that I was brought up to be, a good person, a nice person, not a person that does a lot of gossiping and all those things. And I love this program. That's why I say I'm a grateful alcoholic. And one time someone told me, it really pissed them off, I said that. And I go, you know, I'm really sorry. But you know, someday maybe you can say you're grateful. You know, where would we be today if we didn't have this program out of us? I would be dead. There's absolutely no question about that. So anyway, I can't tell you how important this program is to me. My husband was about a year and a half after I quit drinking that he come home one night and said he wasn't going to go down and play cards anymore. And I go, oh, yeah, yeah, like, you know, like I was never going to have another drink. And he didn't. But he doesn't like to hear this, but I tell him he has never been that supportive. I mean, I go to 4 meetings a week now. That's how sick I really am. I used to go to 1 a year, and now I go to 4 a week. But I ate my life, you know what? And I've been taught through my sponsor, my friends, I have to give back. I go a lot of times just for me. Sorry, I'm very selfish. Very selfish. But other times I go, maybe I can give one thing back. And he has a problem with that. Now you're saying, yes, this is a really good thing. He golfs 6 to 7 days a week, right? Okay. But it's daytime. It's different if you're gone at night. I don't understand that. I'll never understand that. So I'm not going to try to understand it anymore. But he doesn't like being alone at night, you know. And I love being alone during the day. I tell him I don't either, but that's a lie because I love being alone. If he quits golf, I'll go to meetings during the day. But I do want you to know he is a good man. He is a really good man, and he helps around the house. But this is the one thing that I've just talked to Julie so many times about. I just have to let it go because he's never going to change. He's never going to change. And I'm never going to stop doing. Like tonight, he goes, what time do you think you'd be home? I go, when I get there? Well, how long's the meeting? I go, depends how long I talk. He goes, no, there is a time limit. I go, I don't know, whenever I get in the house. Well, can you give me like 10 or 11? I go, 11. It would have been 11 if I was still drinking, because I would have left wherever I was and gone to another place. But anyway, that's kind of more or less my story. And I want to tell you young girls sitting out there, you may feel like fallen angels right now. But if you keep working the program, get a good sponsor, and keep doing what you're doing, you're going to get your wings back. I promise you that. Thank you for letting me stand up here and share.